Every day I'm moving further from sobriety, further from sobriety, so sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local arts, with your host, Leslie M. Scott Jones. What up, Les?
What's up? Holy crap. I'm tired.
Why are you tired?
I'm tired because I'm about to be a grandma.
Does that take a lot out of you?
It does. It does. Especially when it's a child whose first sentence was, I do it. And now, you know, at 20.
And now she did it?
And at 23 and, you know, 7.5 months pregnant. It's, I need my mommy. And I'm like, wait a minute. You ain't needed me. You said you ain't needed me. Now all of a sudden you need me.
She didn't need you 7 months ago.
Right? Right? So, yes. So I've been driving up and down the road between here and Williamsburg, making sure that she stays sane before the baby comes, because after the baby comes, she'll just be crazy. I mean, that's just how it happens. But
will she have enough energy to be crazy? Because, you know, after the baby comes, that's big. That's prime sleep deprivation land, as far as I've been able to see.
It is, although if this baby is anything like her as a baby, we'll be okay, because she slept through the night at 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
2 weeks.
How is that possible? I don't think that's physically...
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yep.
Oh, wow. What'd you do?
What do you mean, what did I do?
What did you slip into her little phone?
I didn't slip anything to her.
A little something?
No. No.
All right, okay.
Oh, my God.
I'm just saying, it's too late for Child Protective Services to take her now. Huh. You can come clean.
Nope.
Statute of limitations is over.
No.
You can just let that stuff out.
Sorry, if you hear me munching, I'm eating an apple.
That's not going to be annoying to people at all.
Hey, you don't want me hangry on the radio, do you?
That would be much more annoying.
No, I didn't do anything. I literally, at her last bottle before she went to bed... It was a double bottle, and she ate the bottle, and then I sang her to sleep, and that was it. 8 p.m. at night, she wouldn't wake up until at least 7 or 8 the next morning.
Dang.
Yeah, she liked her sleep.
Dang.
Yep.
Dang. Look at you.
Well, and my mom was really mad at me because both of my pregnancies, I had no morning sickness. And she had morning sickness, like, continuously.
Wait a minute, wait. So you don't get hungover.
No, I don't.
Which we know.
Right.
And you had no morning sickness.
Nope. And my labors were only, both of my labors were only 6 hours.
Okay, now I invite so many people to join me in hating you. Because that's just not, that's beyond not fair. That's just like a superhuman level of not fair.
I'm special. Didn't you know?
God.
I'm special.
Oh, God.
Clinton is now disgusted with me, and he's turning away. He's had enough.
I'm done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm done.
I mean, if I could give it to other people, I would. I hate to see my friends hungover, but, you know.
That's very generous.
Next morning, I want to go get pancakes, and they're like, And I'm like, what's wrong with you?
You know, I love that. I love that you don't even know that pancakes are such the wrong thing to have when you're hungover. I love that you don't even know that.
I don't.
Let's go for a jog.
I've never had... Well, I'm not jogging. I mean, you know, I'd have two black eyes. But...
They're constructing a building down the street. Let's go stand next to the pile driver. The sun's up. It's very, very bright. It's so energetic.
Oh, my God. This is my favorite song. Let's turn it up. I've never had it. I have no idea what that feels like. And according to all my friends, I don't want to know. Like, it sounds really bad.
That's bad. Well, let's turn to something good.
Okie dokie.
Sort of. I think that's like a four on the segue level.
I know.
That was just, it wasn't.
You were distracted by all the pregnancy talk, weren't you?
Why is it that you assume that anything vaguely estrogen related somehow throws me off? Have I not been around women all my life?
No, you
have. I just met them the other day?
No.
Have I been living in this little bubble of testosterone and masculinity?
But I also know that...
Unknown that there are experiences outside of my own.
No, I do not think that. But I also know that a lot of men, when things that are estrogen related are talked about, they, you know, just kind of go, yeah, I don't know what that is.
Here's the thing. You know me. Like, you know me. And I get, it's just like there are a lot of men.
I'm sorry, that was a common reaction. And I did not take into account your distinct personality. I apologize.
There are a lot of men who got up and went for a run this morning. That ain't me.
Well, it won't me either.
You know that ain't me.
Lord of mercy, no, that won't me. Like I said, I'd have two black eyes. I can't do that.
All back. Let's run to our first guest. Better.
That was better. That was better. We're both tired.
Amanda McRaven.
Hello.
Save us from the banality of our talk.
I will try. It's very early on a Sunday morning.
How are you, my dear?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you are an old Charlottesville person. Well, not an old person, but you're an old. You have your connection to Charlottesville
head.
Goes way back.
It goes way back.
You're an old head,
but you've been away.
I have. I grew up here. I went to UVA, and I moved to California in 2010. So I've been gone ever since then.
Wow.
Yeah. So there we go. Better. Cool. Yeah. So it's really, really nice to be back.
Cool. Are you back for a visit, or is this just a...
I'm back directing the Wolves at UVA. So
talk
that is
about
why I'm here.
That.
Oh, there's so much to talk about. We open on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a wonderful experience. The Wolves is really quite literally taking theater departments across the country by storm right now. It was the finals for the Pulitzer in 2016, and it's one of the only pieces written for an entirely female ensemble. And so I think there's this wonderful passion around the play right now that everybody's doing. And it's written for young women, which is not very common.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to be part of that movement, being here doing that. Yeah.
So what's the setup of the play?
It's a girls' soccer team. There's 9 women. You never actually see them play soccer. Each scene, there's 6 scenes. Each scene is a warm-up for a soccer game. So at the end of the scene, the whistle blows, and they run off to play the game.
And what ages are the characters? What?
The ages of the characters are 16 to 18, 16 to 17.
So it's like a high school soccer team?
Yeah, it's a high school elite women's soccer team. So gotcha. They're like the best of the best to be recruited for. So the UVA women's soccer team, which is amazing.
Right.
These high school girls would be the ones able to be recruited for that. So there's a nice connection to UVA women's soccer, which is amazing.
I was just about to ask. Since, I mean, one of the benefits of doing something like this at UVA is you've got that. Did you guys reach out to the women's soccer team? Did you?
We did. There are NCAA rules that keep you from collaborating.
What?
What?
Yes. Well, I've just been told this. I don't know much about it, but you can't there's something about publicity. You can't do a lot of stuff, but. We informally did. We went to soccer games. We talked to the players after, watched them warm up, sat there and stared at the field while they cooled down.
Because that's not creepy.
Yeah, it's not creepy. There was like a whole, me and the whole cast
hi.
Can we just watch you stretch?
We just want to watch.
And a couple of my cast members knew women on the team. So that was a nice, it was literally one of the first things we did was go to a women's soccer game. And it's remarkable to watch when you work on a show like this, where I'm not a sports person at all. I like soccer, but when
I got up this morning and went for a run.
Right,
I don't
totally.
Know about you.
I know, too. No. So to look at a soccer game as somebody who's processing how you make all these pieces work, it was really exciting to watch and be able to see them work together, the soccer players, the way an ensemble of actors do. And so there's this nice synergy where the actors become a team even as they're being a team.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been a really fantastic process.
So that's interesting because, I mean, I don't know what it's been like for you, but because maybe it's different. But for me, when I was growing up, there was always this big divide between art and sports, and specifically theater and sports.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
Because the sports kids were the cool ones. Yeah.
Right.
And we were the nerds.
And we were the geeks.
Yeah. We were the geeks.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you look at the two, there actually are a lot of similarities.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very, very similar. Now, not everybody thinks that. I mean, that's what I believe in as a theater maker, is you make ensemble theater, you make it together. So even if I'm directing a play that has stars in it, I find a way for it to feel like everybody's playing an integral part.
Mm-hmm.
This play is
By the way, that's one of the things I love about your work.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that's the reason I was hired. I've never been told explicitly, but I think that's why Colleen Kelly hired me to direct this show, is she knows my work as well. And but this is one of the only plays written truly ensemble. Like, there's no... It's nine voices the whole time, for the most part.
Is there a coach character?
There is a... So the coach is an absent man who's off stage.
Nice.
And so the team captain, who's just a kid, is taking over because her dad is also a coach. Mm-hmm. So you have this really interesting character of sort of a reluctant... She doesn't want to play the coach. She's only a kid, but somebody has to do it. And so Sarah DeLapp, the playwright, is also making this commentary on these men. All the coaches they name in the play are men, which is interesting.
Oh, interesting.
Who are just kind of hands off. And so 25, the team captain, becomes the coach character. But yeah, it's very much like a sports team. It functions the same way. You have to take care of each other. You can't let each other down. You have to know where everybody is at any moment. You have to be ready for anything that happens. And it's a beautiful thing that she's done. Also, to give a space, it's a very feminist play, to give a space for women to be doing something that is not about being pretty, that is not about putting clothes on.
Yes.
That is women doing this thing that we don't typically think of as, of course, you know, the profiles being raised, thank God, and the Women's World Cup, right?
Right.
Abby Wambach tried to, you know.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing time for women's sports, but
is it a space where women are being competitive, where women are being aggressive, where women
hugely competitive?
No, that's what's beautiful about this play, is that she creates this competitive atmosphere. But because Sarah DeLapp's quite young, she wrote this play when she was still in her MFA program, and she was working with teenage girls, so she's like as a tutor when she wrote it. Mm-hmm. So she's managed to capture this real sense of community where they don't compete with each other, even though they could be in competition with each other, which is very different from how a male playwright would frame the story. So you have this, and women are inherently, and I think that's why it's so beautiful to watch women play soccer. There is less drama. You hear that a lot. You know, the male soccer players like have the fits. There's less drama with women's soccer, and there's more like, let's figure this out, let's work together. So the play is also capturing that even though they're in, and there's a couple moments where they get these moments of competition, they bubble up, and then we come back to that sense of camaraderie, which is really beautiful.
Well, that's kind of how women work.
Yeah, I know. We're in the best cases, when we don't have a male influence, a patriarchal influence,
right,
we do tend to work together.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when we're told we need to compete that we start to step on each other, right?
Yeah.
So this is a beautiful, beautiful example of that. It's a very, like I said, a very feminist play in the truest sense of the word.
Were you familiar with the play before Colleen approached you?
I wasn't, actually. I somehow missed it. So I was very, very happy I read the script and just, it was astonishing. So yeah, it's been a beautiful journey to be here working on it.
Can I ask what type of preparation you did in order to get into it? Like, did you Because you say you're not a sports person. Did you immediately start watching soccer? Did you say, oh, okay, let's try to reach out to UVA women's soccer. I'm going to leave that to when we make that happen. I mean, what?
Yeah, I'm not producing the show, so on my own work, for just my own work, I started watching a lot of YouTube, soccer YouTube. But there was a lot to figure out in the play itself because you have 9 voices. Mm-hmm. Nobody has a name. They just have their numbers.
They're all numbers, yeah.
So a lot of the research is really trying to understand who these women are outside of cliche. I really, really wanted to know that before I auditioned because I think it's really easy to stereotype teenage girls.
Oh, yeah.
And when you first look at it, you're like, oh, new girl, weird girl, popular girl,
right,
smart girl. And so my research was really to get underneath that because ultimately it's not a play about soccer.
Right.
It's a play about young women trying to figure out who they are in the world and deal with change and their bodies and how to stand in their power in mm-hmm. a really beautiful way. So a lot of my research was focused on making sure that the audience would be able to distinguish who each of these women are. In addition to the soccer just provides kind of the rough framework for it.
All right. Well, we've been talking. Wow. This has been so fascinating. We need to take a break and do a drop, and then we'll come back.
Pay half a bill?
Pay half a bill. Pay a bill and a half. Or a Wilhelmina and a half, as it could be. Here we go. We'll be back with Homegrown.
This is Daniel and Lauren from Lowland Hum.
And you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
18, just a few seconds away from 19 minutes past the hour, you're listening to Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Got Leslie in the house, and we are talking, if you are just joining us, to Amanda McCraven, director of UVA Drama's upcoming production of The Wolves. What up, Amanda?
Hi. So, how did the process of you getting hired happen? Because you're in California, right?
Yeah, when you're a theater director, you keep making work and you stay connected to your connections.
Right.
It's very much that kind of world. And so I really kind of got an email out of the blue from Colleen.
Oh.
It was like, I think you'd be good for this, which is the way it works when you're a theater director.
Right. So,
sometimes often you will go pitch, but you could stay in somebody's roster for years and then they call you up and like, you'd be good for this play. So that's
right.
What happened.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
But like I said, so much in my wheelhouse. So
yeah,
it's really nice to be, cause I grew up here. I went to UVA. So it's really nice to be recognized for the kind of work I've been doing
mm-hmm.
since I grew up.
Right.
And to be asked to come back and share that with the students has been good.
It's interesting for you to say that it's so much in your wheelhouse. So talk a little bit more about how is it so much in your wheelhouse?
To create work that's by and for women, that prioritizes women's voices, that foregrounds women's experiences, that's very much a part of what I do. I've also spent a lot of time doing social justice theater. That's a really important part of what I do. And so this obviously intersects with that. And then ensemble work. So those three things together, that you're creating work as a team, as we were saying, that's what kind of nestles it right there in my wheelhouse.
So surprise, surprise, we've been spending a lot of time over the last year or more talking to artists who are using art as a political expression, mm-hmm. art as a means of protest. Yeah. I don't know why we got on.
Why would that
thing
happen?
It just
who
it
knows?
Just, you know,
who,
you stumble onto something,
who
and you're
can
like,
tell, oh, really?
I guess I'm just doing this now. Have you found? Have you over the last year or so felt more of a push, more of a pressure, more of an importance to focus on that, which I know has always been an interest
yeah.
for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I teach performance studies as well at a big state university in California with an incredibly diverse population of students, many of whom are dreamers, many of whom are Latinx.
Mm.
And I could, you could see the fear after the election. And I, and the stories that my students told me, like things about pizza delivery men who delivered a pizza to their house, like, you know, for years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden,
Are saying racist things to them because they can.
Yeah.
So it's palpable. We didn't have the same thing in LA that we, that you, that the Charlottesville experience, but we do have this huge population of people who are directly, very directly affected by the election.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I was already teaching social justice performance, but you could see after the election, everything became personal for the students.
Yeah.
And the students were then creating work that was not an academic exercise, that was like, I need to say this to the world because this is happening to me.
Yeah.
So over where you are with the demographics that you have, is there a Latino theater or Latinx theater going on that's just not that we're not hearing a lot of, or at least that I'm not seeing over here on the East
Absolutely.
Coast?
Absolutely. Definitely. Huge population of Latinx writers, actors, makers in the Southern California area, absolutely creating their own work. We have an amazing complex, the Latino Theater Company of Los Angeles, and they're always creating work that's foregrounds the Latin experience. So it's a really exciting place to be.
I'm jealous. I want to see that.
Yeah, right? I was as a kid who grew up in Charlottesville, moving to Southern California is my favorite thing I've ever done. I was just like, there are so many ways to be in the world that I just didn't experience.
Yeah.
I needed to leave Charlottesville to realize my own privilege as well, which my students have taught me. Mm. So I feel like that's something that I can bring back to the UVA students as well, who are far more woke than I was when I was at UVA, but still to be able to offer that. Grateful for that perspective.
Yeah. How was it coming back to UVA, after being in California for so long, and then, and getting the opportunity to work with students? I mean, nostalgic, definitely, but also...
And coming back to UVA in a different era.
Absolutely.
In a very different era.
Absolutely. I can't say that specifically working with the students I've noticed for the effects of August 12th. I have with my friends who live in town. Mostly what I've noticed with the students is just such a different approach to being than when I was a student. Mm. I mean, the phones in the faces all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's a totally new thing. And they're also, like I said, a way more woke generation than when I was there. So it has been a really dynamic experience.
Yeah.
And it's always weird to come back to where you went to undergrad, too.
Right.
But also great. So, yeah.
So I know that you have nothing to do with programming. But I got to put this out there. Yeah. Live Arts
is also
doing
the Wolves.
Because when I found out that you were doing the Wolves, I'm like, oh, Amanda, I got to get Amanda on the show. What's this show? And I'm reading about the Wolves like, I've heard this before. What is...
So my thought, it's very rare. So Samuel French is the licensing agent. They have licensed it to, like I said, nearly every university is doing it. VCU did it. JMU did it. UVA is doing it. George Mason's doing it. So my thought is that they were going to make a lot of money off it because it's 9 women. Mm-hmm. It's actually 10 characters. So I don't know what's involved with that. I've never heard of a play being licensed in the same town in such a short span of time.
Yeah.
My thought just is maybe one, because one's academic and one's non-professional. So, but it's a little bit odd.
Yeah.
So, but it'll be interesting if Charlottesville audiences really love this production to get to see it again. I think that's cool, actually.
Yeah, with probably a completely different cast.
Yeah, and
definitely a completely different cast.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Could
sometimes UVA undergrads can do stuff in community, but yeah.
I actually had students who weren't cast. So we will all audition for the Live Arts one. I'm like, go. Good.
Yeah.
There were so many great women I could have cast. So I think it's great if they get cast at Live Arts. Yeah. So I wish I could see that production because, Live Arts is my old home.
Did you... So I know that in casting, frequently the idea... It's always a question about casting how much physical type and physical ability mm-hmm. goes in yeah. Goes into casting. Yeah. I've just done this show, and it's a show with three brothers, and my three actors, quite by coincidence, really look like they could. They just look right together.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, like, doing community theater, you don't have the luxury to cast with physical casting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just so nice when that happens. In a play like this, when you're dealing with athletes, I mean, like, the first thing that I would think is, oh, darn, I need to find this many people who look like they could be athletes. Mm-hmm. I mean, did that hit you?
Yes, and I was more focused on having a diversity of ethnicity and body type, so mm-hmm. that I was telling a story of young women in America more than soccer players. And other directors might prioritize. I don't tend to prioritize looks over other things, except for a variety of looks.
Right.
So that wasn't as important to me. But it did factor in. I did cast, when it came down to two people up for a part, I would choose the one with more soccer experience.
Mm-hmm.
So she could bring that to the play, which has been great for ensemble. To look at it, one of the cast members, and be like, show us something, show us a drill, teach the cast.
Right.
So that they're helping each other to create the physical landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I will leave it up to audiences whether they look like soccer players or not. It's a very difficult play. So there's a lot to focus on.
And leave it up to audiences to decide whether or not they care.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
So I read The Wolves last year, and
don't give the ending away.
I won't give the ending away, but there are a lot of tense moments in it. There are things that come up in these girls' conversations that I guess the regular person wouldn't think teenage girls talk about.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that. I've been thinking a lot as I worked on it of the Parkland kids.
Right.
And how girls have these voices and this power and this wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Not the wisdom you and I were had, because we've lived a lot more years, but a wisdom that we should still value.
Yeah.
Of where they come from.
Right.
And I love that. I love that we are watching women figure out things that we often as a society don't give them credit for being able to handle.
Mm. Yeah.
And you see them, and they, not all the girls can handle everything,
mm-hmm.
but they still keep taking care of each other, and they still let it exist as part of the conversation, even if they don't really know how to talk about it.
Right.
They're not afraid to at least let it.
Yeah.
Be like, what about this thing? I don't know, but okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking yeah. specifically about the conversation about the word retard.
Yes, I love that part.
Yeah, and yeah. it's like, oh my God, you can't say that. And it's right. like, what do you mean I can't say that? Of course yeah. I can say that. What else am I supposed to say? Like,
yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, oh wait, that's wrong. Nobody told me that was wrong.
Right.
And like, but there are so many moments like that in yeah. the play that I think are not just great for women to have that conversation, mm-hmm. but it's also, to me, it's like, why doesn't society have this conversation?
Absolutely.
You know, like,
yeah.
like if teenage girls can have this conversation right. and figure it out, like, what's wrong with y'all?
Yes.
Because society's retarded. Oh, wait. Oh,
wait.
Shoot.
Oh.
Oh. And that's the social justice aspect of the play.
Yeah.
Is we're going to talk about things that we should all talk about together. And we'll show it to you in this play. And then let's have a bigger conversation.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Amanda, thank you so much for coming on the show. Can you yeah. give the when, where, and for the Wolves?
Yep, it's at UVA Drama, Ruth Kaplan Theater. It opens Thursday the 18th, shows at 8 o'clock. It's only an hour and 40 minutes, no intermission. So if you like your plays
no halftime.
Quick and dirty, as I do, it's a great opportunity. You'll be home by 10 o'clock if you live close.
Cool.
yeah, and it runs for 2 weekends, closing on the 27th. There's a matinee and an evening performance on the 20th. I'm not sure about the second weekend, but that's what I know.
Amanda, Charlottesville welcomes you home. Thanks for visiting.
Thank you all. This was great.
Yeah, this was fun.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, Leslie, let's tell them about some other artistic events coming up this week.
Are we doing a list of stuff? All righty. Here we go. Currently running through January 27th, Reflections, Native Art Across Generations, an exhibition of the work of several contemporary Native American artists at UVA's Fralin Art Museum. Oh, I must go to the Fralin. Currently running through December 8th, the American Shakespeare Center runs its summer-fall season with four plays, Emma Whipday's adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma, George Etheridge's The Man of Mode, or Sir Fling Flutter.
Oh, Sir Fling Flutter.
And Richard III and As You Like It by Shakespeare. Currently running through October 27th, Ragtime at Live Arts, which I saw.
Did you?
Wow.
That bad?
No. I mean...
That raggy?
Just...
That time laden?
Just...
That syncopated?
Wow. If you can get tickets, because I think they're almost sold out,
boom,
you should go see it. Currently running through October 28th, The Line in Winter at Four County Players. I think I know the director of that. I don't know. His name?
I hear he's a jerk.
His name is escaping me. I don't know. It's one of those, like,
I hear he's an
two,
arrogant,
like, first name things.
I hear he's an arrogant, egotistical.
I heard that too, but it's just, it's going to bug me. I don't know. It'll come to me later. Anyway, currently running art exhibits by local artist Jane Scafty. I hope I pronounced that right. Presents her drawings about the effects of climate change in the New Dominion Bookshop. Michael Doyle presents Michael Doyle drawings from jail at New City Arts Welcome Gallery. June Colmer and Aiden Mills present Embodying a New Narrative, a Visual Discussion. Works by Aaron Farrington, Will Kerner, and Rochelle Summer at the McGuffey Art Center. Joint exhibit by FUCC, the Feminist Union of Seville Creatives at City Space. Ooh, that's a lot. October 16th, Virginia filmmakers present a film craft workshop on production, design, set, props, costume, hair, makeup with Jay Taylor. On the 17th, all ages show and tell at the Gallery of Curiosities at the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative. On the 18th through the 20th, the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center presents Old School, a play celebrating the teachers and educators of the original school, written by Carusa Brown. That's right. Homegrown. Also on the 18th, UVA MFA Reading Series continues with students Caleb Nolan and Justin Keenan reading their work at New Dominion Bookshop. Yes. Dreama Bell and Karma DeVille welcome up-and-coming drag performers to sing and dance at a Charlottesville open stage at Rapture. The 19th, Third Friday's Improv Workshop at the V. Earl Dickinson Building at Piedmont Virginia Community College. And the 20th, Songs of Fall. At Poetry Retreat by the Charlottesville Writer House. And for your musical options this week.
Yeah. For your musical options this week, today, the University Singers sing of the Bernstein Mass. At 2:30 p.m. at the Paramount Theater. Also today, Patrick Goldwell and friends at Normal Cider Works. Callie Garrett and Gary Green, Glasshouse Winery. The Charlottesville Municipal Band plays the Martin Luther King Community. Plays with the Martin Luther King Community Ensemble at the V. Earl Dickinson Building at Piedmont Virginia Community College.
That's a long name for a building.
It is a long name.
I'm just saying, it's
kind of a long
name.
Building. I mean, if you stretched it out,
it's an oddly shaped building. It's like a weird S.
It is, but if you stretched it out, I bet it would be a long building.
It would be. Yeah.
Because that's, of course, how you justify the names of buildings. It's just based.
Well.
It's totally a
Is there another way to do it? I don't think so.
I don't think so. The White House, it's just blocky.
It's a white house. Right.
West Wing, East Wing, White House. That's why you name it that.
Makes sense to me.
There you go. October 17th, Twisted Branch T-Bazaar presents Low-Key Life, Soulful Experimental Hip-Hop with Thomas Sobolik, Christopher Lunamega, and Natural Born Leaders. October 17th, LG and Friends at The Whiskey Jar. October 17th, Gypsy Town at the Shabim Pub and Braai, also the Center for Vocal Study, has a teacher recital at The Haven.
Whoa.
Yeah.
The teachers have a recital?
Yeah, the teachers have a recital.
What about the students?
I'm sure the students have recitals, but every once in a while, the teacher's got to go out and strut their stuff. Show that they know what they know.
Okay, I'm just saying that's a little weird.
Show what they sing.
All right.
It happens. It's not, it's
okay,
it's
just seems a little odd to me. Go ahead.
It's a thing. October 18th. Okay, here's the long one. The Christ Episcopal Church's October, Thursday, noontime, half hour organ and carillon concert series continues with Jesse Radcliffe, choir master and organist at St. James Episcopal Church, all the way over in Warrenton. Got to come down to Seaville to stretch your Warrenton stuff.
Okay.
October 18th, no particular order at Dirty Nelly's. October 18th, the Foosticks at the Whiskey Jar on the 19th. It's an all-star reggae night featuring Chris Leva and Robert Jospe at the Glasshouse Winery. And October 20th, Rapunzel's Coffee and Books holds the finals of its 16th annual songwriter contest.
Really?
Don't want to miss that. Yeah, really. Every Sunday, of course, is Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music. They have the weekly open jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church.
Where else?
Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar, the ATM unit at Rapture, and the Songwriter Night at the local every Tuesday. It's the traditional Irish session
at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub.
Every Tuesday, of course, is also Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero, and the Ragged Mountain String Band at Whiskey Jar. Every Wednesday, it's the Open Mic Night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. The Open Mic Night at Holly's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo.
Right.
The Jazz Collective Number 9 at Fellini's Number 9.
Of course.
Did you realize it's also DG and Friends at the Bebedero?
I did.
Bachata Fusion at the X Art Park.
Bachata Fusion.
Oh, and it's 502 Fossils of the Shapeen Bub and Bry.
Oh, my God.
And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's.
Oh, my God. Wednesdays
amazing.
Are so long. They're
just so
much.
Packed. Every Thursday, Lua at the Bebedero.
And?
Also every Thursday,
John Durth.
With the John Durth Quintet at Miller's, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Durth. And those are just some.
Just some.
Just some.
Not all.
Not all, certainly.
Not all.
But some of the wonderful musical.
Just some of them.
And other artistic events in our wonderful musical and other artistic town. This is Homegrown.
Drop!
This is Mary Gordon Hall. You're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And what a secret this is.
That's right, Mary. We hope it doesn't stay a secret for long.
I know.
Tell, if you listen to Homegrown and like us, tell people about it. It's like, I listen to this show.
I miss Mary. Mary needs to come back.
We should get Mary back on the show. Mary's great.
She's such a sweet soul.
Mary Gordon. 39 minutes past the hour, almost 40 minutes past the hour, where you listen to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, which is why we are here with a dedicated local artist.
Oh, now that's a good segue.
Got back on my segue groove.
You did it. You did it.
We are here with the man who always has the four or five plans. Ty Cooper.
What's up? What's up?
How's it going, Ty?
It's going well. It's going well.
Welcome back to the show, my man.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, you're doing a documentary filmmaking workshop.
Yeah. I think everybody needs to know how to do that.
Oh, everybody?
Yes.
Everybody.
Everyone.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
Now, people ask a lot of questions when I'm on Facebook Live,
right.
You know, just kind of promoting the stuff that I do and the film work that I do. So I get tons of questions in my inbox,
right,
and stuff like that. And I have a lot of conversations about it. So
you thought you'd just go ahead and teach a class?
Why not?
And be done.
Yeah, just be done.
Just
with
answer
it.
All the questions.
Answer all the questions
so they can stop.
Exactly.
So when people put questions
I'm here to help,
now,
though. I'm here to help though.
When people put questions now in your Facebook inbox, do you just say, "Come to the class"?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm gonna say right now.
Of
just come
course
to the class.
He does.
Come to the class.
Of course,
yeah, come
he
to
does.
The class. Oh no, I got a little.
Yeah,
little
right?
frog. Mm-hmm. That's okay. You got some Fiji to take it out.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
Exactly.
Look, Fiji to fight the frog. He got the bougie water. Look.
Oh,
look.
My goodness.
He got the bougie water. Turn it around when you see the label. Look.
You giving him free promotion like that?
Turn around.
Jesus.
Turn around. He got the bougie water.
Y'all giving him free promotion.
See, I do that, so now I can call them and say, hey,
come on.
We got you.
I'm a marketer, so I just went the other way. But, yeah, you're right. Position yourself.
So what is, I'm just going to jump in with the...
With the what? Right? Come to the workshop now. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go, sir.
So what's the... This sounds like such a cheesy question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I really want to know. So what are the most frequent questions that people have? Actually, that's not what I want to know. What are the biggest misunderstandings or misconceptions that people have about documentary film work?
Some people think it's a glamorous effort because of people like Michael Moore. You know,
right.
Selling, you know, making hundreds of millions of dollars, or Al Gore, but it's not like that. It's hard work. It's less glorious. You know, it's not like a feature film where you get all this, the accolades for. You know, a lot of times you're just doing social issues or you're trying to build awareness about someone's life or some type of issue. And you know, sometimes your heart, most of the time your heart has to be really in it because it's not something that, it's not the most fun thing. You know, you have some documentaries where a person will go into the bush in Africa, the Congo. It may not even come out alive, but they go out there to try to chase the story down and really kind of expose what is happening. So if you have, a certain type of animal that may be distinct. Mm-hmm. And you want to preserve that, so you want to bring away attention. You want to bring attention to that particular issue. Then you go out there and you got to get the story and you got to capture these things. And sometimes, like I said, you may not come out. So it just depends on what you're doing.
Are there issues or stories that just won't work, or is it just a matter of your skill as a documentary storyteller?
I think every story can work. If it's something that you think that you're passionate about and you want to get out, and you have some type of angle that you think is being underrepresented, then anything can work. You can put it out there. But I think one of the questions that I get the most, I would say is, how much it costs to do. Is it so expensive, or the equipment and things like that? That's really the most popular question, is that the equipment. But to be honest with you, that question is like really the most irrelevant question, because really, honestly, you can make a documentary or a film with your phone,
right?
If you really want to, I choose not to, because I'd rather go. A different quality, and a phone, although it have the apps, and there are the apps out there that control your ISO, your frame rate, and so forth, your shutter, but still it's not the same. It's really not the same.
Yeah.
There's limitations on your phone, so if I don't have to use a phone, then I'm gonna use my equipment. But technically speaking, if you want to capture images and tell your story, you can do it with the phone. But I just think it's much bigger than that.
So, so basically anybody can be a documentary filmmaker.
Anyone can be one. It just depends on the level of what you
find. Anybody can have access to the tools.
Yeah, access to the tools. And then you just still have to have your... Because it's all storytelling at the end of the day as well. You have fiction, you have nonfiction. So with documentaries, it's real. You're trying to tell the truth.
Right.
And telling the truth is a huge responsibility.
See, that's the thing that intimidates me so much, and I have so much respect for documentary filmmakers because of that. Because I did I dabbled in journalism just a bit, and very quickly I felt like this wasn't for me. Because as soon as I went out and started talking to people, it just impressed on me, like, oh wow, these are people's lives. These are real people. And, and you could see, and you could see them being a little wary and being a little cagey and being concerned about what they were saying to a journalist. Because, of course, it's like they were there. It's a big responsibility. They're putting how they're going to be placed in you. And especially when I was talking to somebody, when I was thinking, I'm going to write something bad about this person. I couldn't. It freaked me out.
Right. You my documentary, America's Darkest Future, this is going on 3 years of filming and taking the breaks for research, filming, taking the breaks for research. And the reason why, I mean, really, I could have just did it in the first year. Went out there, captured a story, different places, put it together. But the, when you America's Darkest Future is about the inaccessibility of pre-K in this country. So that's not a light undertaking.
Right.
You know, I may have approached it at first as though, okay, yeah, this needs to be told, and let me go ahead and do this and knock it out.
Right.
But when you realize the responsibility that you have accepted, then it's like, that's when you start getting nervous, and that's when you're like, oh, okay, hold up, let me
wait.
Okay, yeah, let me hold on. Let me regroup. Let me do this right. You know what I'm saying? This is information. This is stuff that could change someone. So if I put something out, and I'm trying to change the minds of people who don't think that universal pre-K should be a reality in this country, those who can afford high quality pre-K for their children,
right,
and feel as though everyone else should just go ahead and just make it the best way they can. I need to change the mind of that type of person.
Right.
I need to make sure that people have something to be able to go to their congressmen, their senators, their city councilors, and so on, and their state senators, and say, hey, we need this in our city. We need this in our state. And when I take that on, that's a huge responsibility. So with the filmmaking workshop, I think that my responsibility is to make sure that people understand their responsibility and how to go about doing it. And that's what the techniques I'm showing. People are going to have the opportunity to actually come on stage, because we're actually going to shoot a documentary at the workshop.
What?
It's going to be a small version, but they're coming on stage, they're going to
put a pin in there because we're going to come back, because we're going to do a drop.
That's cool.
We're going to do a drop, then we're going to come back and talk about that, because I want to hear about that.
Okay. I'll speedboat it. I'm sorry.
All right. This is Homegrown. We're going to do a drop.
This is Joel Jones. You're listening to Homegrown on 94.7.
50 minutes past the hour. You listen to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And I'm here with Leslie. I'm here with Ty Cooper here on Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. Ty is doing documentary filmmaking workshop. Tell us, what are your plans for the filmmaking workshop?
To have fun, but also, you know, teach people. You know, I want it to be really interactive, and I'm providing hands-on experience with the cameras, with the lighting, with the audio, how to set up the lighting. You know, because there's many different ways of lighting. Well, not many, but there's different key ways of lighting, and also sound design and so forth as well. So, you know, setting up the boom mic and the live mic, and, you know, kind of how to position people, framing, composition, you know, choosing your background to make it more interesting, you know, an interesting look. Because interviews are a main part of documentaries.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So it's very difficult to... You can have documentaries without interviews. Yes, you can, but you know, most documentaries have interviews. So so that's one of the things that we're going to cover that's going to be huge. But then also we're going to have people come up with an idea, and then I'm going to try to see who's an audience. No matter, I don't know how many people are going to be there. Whoever comes is free. So whoever comes, but you know, I may say, "Hey, what do you do for a living?" Someone may say, "I'm a professor." So all right. Professor and what? They'll say what they are. Then this and this and that. And then I'll try to say, all right, well, since you're a professor and this, let's try to do a documentary right now about that.
Okay.
So we give people, give everyone about 30 minutes to kind of come up with questions and do a little bit of research online about that particular field that professor is, you know, studies.
Right.
And we put together something really quickly. Have them come on stage. Have that professor come on stage to be interviewed by these people.
Oh, wow.
Where do you sit at? To the left of the camera, to the right? Are they going to look off camera?
Right.
The whole nine, you know? And then we go deep into the different types of documentaries and which one we're going to use and the whole, you know, all that.
So this workshop is free?
Yeah, it's free. Yeah. It's not free.
Wait. Hold on. Ty Cooper's doing something for free. Wait.
We did not establish that Ty Cooper is doing something for free. We've established that somebody has arranged it so you have access to Ty Cooper for free. Those are two different things.
That's more like it. What Clinton just said. Somebody pays it.
Okay. I was going to say.
It's free for you.
I was gonna be worried about you for a minute. Hold on.
No, I'm good.
All right.
Access to Ty Cooper for free. What? Like, who isn't going to be there?
A lot of people may not come, you know? But hey, those who come will have a great time. Mm-hmm. It's a four-hour workshop. Bring your own lunch. It's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Okay.
At the V.R. Dickerson Building on the campus of PVCC.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a good time. It's Friday. What's that? What is Friday? 19th?
It is
the 19th.
Yeah, the 19th. I got so much stuff going on.
Okay, so you can do your workshop, and then you're going to take a little break, and then you're going to come to my birthday dance party at Champion.
Oh, you got a birthday party?
Yep.
That night?
Yep.
Oh, all right. All right. All right.
Maybe you could do a documentary about that.
Yeah, no.
You should do a documentary about my birthday party.
We have a couple.
It's going to be monumental.
We have so many. I have a couple projects.
In fact, you should turn the whole workshop into that. Not because I know you've planned stuff, but here's the you should say, okay, out there somewhere is Leslie M. Scott Jones.
She's got
a birthday dance party at Champion. Go.
I will do that. But not off topic of filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
maybe off topic of documentary, but I have Mingle showing November 17th.
Yeah, Your feature short film.
Yeah. I have that shown at the Paramount Theater November 17th, right before the comedy show.
Nice.
So I'm excited.
I'll be back from London by then. So
Okay, good. Yeah,
so I won't miss it.
London. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm jealous. I got rejected from a film festival out there, so I'm upset that I can't go.
Oh, okay. So
So good to you. Good for you.
Did you get rejected or did you get declined?
Give me the name and address. I got you.
All right, good. Yeah, I'm going to send my hit woman over there.
My name's Leslie. I'm from the United States, specifically Charlottesville. No, the Nazis they are still there, but still, just the ones that were there anyway.
I'd like
to talk about Ty Cooper. What are you thinking?
What the hell wrong with you?
Hey, you know what? It builds character, you know, and also, you know, we've been accepted, you know, at film festivals and film series, and we've been declined. So it's part of the business, you know what I'm saying? And especially it's a comedy, too. So a lot of times, a lot of comedies they have a hard time getting to a lot of film festivals.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you see mostly drama and suspense and stuff like that. You know, you don't see a lot of comedy, you don't see a lot of horror at film festivals. So, you know, it's cool. But you have film festivals that do, you know, but this is the first one out as well.
Yeah.
So, and I'm excited though. You know, we're on IMDb because of the Independent Shorts Awards that we got.
That's awesome. You know,
definitely. It's an international film festival.
Right.
And we got honorable mention for the best comedy short. So that's big. I'm happy, but my team is happy about that. Oasis short film series, you know, we got accepted into that.
Right.
So, you know, something cool. And I'm screening it here at the Paramount, you know, in my hometown.
Yeah.
You know.
So. And give us the day again. Which one?
That's November 17th.
November 17th.
Yeah, November 17th.
November 17th.
I may give tickets out to on Friday, the documentary filmmaking workshop. I may give out tickets to the comedy. Because the comedy show, the Mingle is free, but the comedy show isn't, so I may give a couple of free tickets out to participants that come on Friday. Yeah. So, Leslie, you saw Mingle, so...
You know what?
I didn't get a quote yet, but...
I was not sure what I was going to sit down and see, right? Like, it's only like 11 minutes,
yeah,
right?
11 minutes, 30 seconds, yeah.
But, like, the way it starts off is so, like... It's just one of those things where, like, is he really...
No spoilers.
Oh, Lord.
No spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Oh, Lord.
Hey, I'm on the phone with my mom like that.
Yeah,
often. That's how I wrote it that way. That, you know,
oh my God.
I'm not the key writer. The key writer is my friend, Elisa Real, amazing writer. But I have wrote that first scene. Mm-mm. And the reason why I wrote that what you saw is because that's exactly what I do with my mom. So,
oh my
Lord. So it was inspired.
I don't know if you want people to know that about you, Ty.
It's all good.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, when y'all see it, just remember that opening scene, Ty does that with his mama. Just remember that.
But my mother is not like Tyler's mom.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not like Tyler.
You're
yeah. It's a lot that you can't say.
Right. Yes, you are not like Tyler. Yeah. But no, it's really sweet, and there's a lot packed into the 11 minutes. Like there's this huge arc that happens. But inside 11 minutes, like you really feel like you've gone on a journey, and at the end of it you're like, "Oh, word? That's what, man." Like
I was nervous. Leslie came over to my house, actually, to my apartment downtown, and I was like, okay. So I put her on the computer so she could see on a larger screen instead of the phone.
And then
so,
he hovered over me.
No, I went in the kitchen. And
I just
like,
want to see your reactions.
Yeah.
Are you laughing? You smiled at that. Oh, you like that?
I was like, okay, cool. No, but we had a good time. It was cool. I appreciate you coming through and checking it out.
Of course.
And your honest opinion about it.
Yeah. No, it's a really cute movie. And there are a lot of very recognizable moments if you're single.
Oh yeah. It's true to that.
Ty, thank you so much for coming on the show again.
No, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Documentary filmmaking workshop, PVCC, VO
next Friday.
Next Friday.
Yep, the 19th, and you have hands-on experience. So you're not going to just be in the audience being lectured to. You're going to come on stage and really set the scenes up, and we're going to go into how to
shoot
and talk about the, you know, the equipment. We're going to talk about the approaches. We're going to talk about the inspiration, you know, and yada yada. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent.
4 hours of fun.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, this has been Homegrown. I want to thank our guests, Amanda McRaven, Ty Cooper, Leslie, thank you much. Stay tuned for Sunday Morning Wake Up Call coming up next.
I'm going incognito.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.